when he took the actions at the center of the case. In his last court filing before the arguments, Jack Smith told the justices that Donald Trump's actions that led to the charges, if he's convicted, would represent an unprecedented assault on the structure of our government. Special Prosecutor Jack Smith wrote, The effective functioning of the presidency does not require a former president to be immune from accountability for these alleged violations of federal criminal law. He added, To the contrary, a bedrock principle of our constitutional order is that no person is above the law, including the president. Donald Trump, the first former president to be criminally prosecuted, has pleaded not guilty in this case and the three other criminal cases that he faces, seeking to paint them as politically motivated. He has argued that as a former president, he has absolute immunity from criminal prosecution for his official acts, and warned that without such immunity, the threat of future prosecution and imprisonment would become a political cudgel to influence the most sensitive and controversial presidential decisions. In August of 2023, Special Counsel Jack Smith brought four federal criminal counts against Donald Trump in the election subversion case, including conspiring to defraud the United States, obstructing the congressional certification of Joe Biden's electoral victory, and conspiring to do so, and conspiring against the right of Americans to vote. Jack Smith's view was backed on Monday, 3rd of April, by a group of 19 retired four-star U.S. military officers and other former high-ranking national security officials, including retired Army Generals Peter Chiarelli and George Casey, former CIA Director Michael Hayden, and former Navy Secretary Ray Mabus. In a friend-of-court brief, they called Donald Trump's claim of presidential immunity contrary to the foundational principles of our democracy. The former officials told the justices, unless Donald Trump's theory is rejected, we risk jeopardizing America's standing as a purported guardian of democracy in the world and further feeding the spread of authoritarianism, thereby threatening the national security of the United States and democracies around the world. The Supreme Court's decision to hear arguments on Donald Trump's immunity bid in late April postponed his trial, giving Trump a boost as he tries to delay prosecutions while running to regain the presidency. Trump last October sought to have the charges dismissed based on his claim of immunity. U.S. District Judge Tanya Chutkan rejected that claim in December. On appeal, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia Circuit on 6th of February ruled 3-0 against Trump's claim. Donald Trump and his allies made false claims that the 2020 election was stolen and devised a plan to use false electors to thwart congressional certification of Joe Biden's victory. Trump also sought to pressure then-Vice President Mike Pence not to allow certification to go forward. Donald Trump's supporters attacked the Capitol building on 6th of January 2021 in a bid to prevent the certification of election results. The English website of Qatar's Al Jazeera television network has also covered the same story and tells us more. The US Supreme Court agreed recently to take up the unprecedented claim that Donald Trump has absolute immunity from prosecution in the criminal case over his efforts to overturn the 2020 election results, throwing into jeopardy whether it goes to trial before the 2024 presidential election. The justices set oral arguments for the late of April to consider a recent ruling by a three-judge panel at the U.S. Court of Appeals for the D.C. Circuit, which categorically rejected Donald Trump's immunity claim in a decision recently. Donald Trump's criminal case will remain on hold until the Supreme Court ultimately rules on the matter, inserting it into the politically charged position of potentially influencing whether Trump will go to trial before the presidential election in November. The unsigned order said the court intended to address at oral arguments whether, and if so, to what extent does a former president enjoy presidential immunity from criminal prosecution for conduct alleged to involve official acts during his tenure in office. In the federal 2020 election case, Donald Trump faces a four-count indictment in Washington, D.C., brought by the special counsel Jack Smith, that charges him with conspiracy to defraud the United States, conspiracy to obstruct the congressional certification of the election results, and violating American citizens' rights. Donald Trump sought to have the charges dismissed last year, arguing in a 52-page court filing that the conduct he was charged with fell under the so-called outer perimeter of his official duties, which meant he could not be prosecuted because of the broad protections afforded to the presidency. The motion to dismiss contended that all of Trump's attempts to reverse his 2020 election defeat, detailed in the indictment, from pressuring his vice president Mike Pence to stop the congressional certification of Biden's victory to organizing fake slates of electors, were in his capacity as president and therefore protected. At the heart of Donald Trump's legal team's filing was the extraordinary contention that not only was Donald Trump entitled to absolute presidential immunity, but that the immunity applied regardless of Trump's intent in engaging in the conduct described in the indictment. The arguments were rejected by the presiding U.S. District Judge Tanya Chutkan and subsequently by the three-judge panel at the Washington, D.C. Circuit, which wrote in an unsigned decision that they could not endorse such an interpretation of executive power. The opinion by the three-judge panel said, "At bottom, former President Donald Trump's stance would collapse our system of separated powers by placing the president beyond the reach of all three branches of the government. We cannot accept that the office of the presidency places its former occupants above the law for all time thereafter."
This is A to Z. An introduction into Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, self-control when it comes to our Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. So we are so honored to be here in your presence, dear listeners, at your humble service. So we are talking about self-control as a part of our Islamic lifestyle. So in these few sessions, after the holy month of Ramadan has ended, you know, we're trying to just kind of speak about some of the things that we learned in our Ramadan lifestyle that we should continue in our regular lifestyle now that we are moving day by day farther and farther away from the previous holy month of Ramadan. And if you want to look at a positive angle, we are moving closer and closer day by day to the next holy month of Ramadan. And of course, we had said that the lifestyle of the holy month of Ramadan is in reality the peak and the summit of our Islamic lifestyle. So one of the things that we learned back then, and which we need to implement and inculcate in our current continuation of the Islamic lifestyle, is self-control, right? So for so many days, a whole month pretty much, you know, we were able to control ourselves from so many different things. And so now we need to continue that, and we need to be able to control ourselves, and we need to be able to keep in mind and be aware of what we're doing, where we're going, what we're saying, you know, what we're listening to, you know, what we're looking at. These are all different aspects that we need to continue to keep in control. And remember, what's kind of interesting is that in the holy month of Ramadan, it was kind of easier to do these things because Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala helps you extra. That month is really special. But now that we have moved on past the holy month of Ramadan, in these months, it is a little bit more difficult because that extra protection that we had from the Almighty Allah has been reduced. This is kind of like it's a regular month, right? And it's now the regular months of the rest of the year. So we have to kind of, you know, put a little bit more effort when it comes to self-control. But if we do, we will be able to really reap the fruits and the benefits. Welcome back. This is A to Z on IRIB English Radio. So we're talking about self-control as a fundamental part of our Islamic lifestyle. So, of course, you know, we need to control what we are looking at, what we are listening to, what we are saying, what we are thinking, what is in our hearts, right? Where we go to, where we sit, where we stand, meaning who we accompany, what places we are going, what things we are eating, what things we are drinking, right? Consumption in all its various different forms, right? We have to control all of these things because all of these different faculties or all of these different inputs from which we consume things, you know, they have an effect on us. So for example, let's say in the holy month of Ramadan, you decided that you're not going to watch any Hollywood movies. Well, perhaps for the rest of the Islamic lifestyle year, you should try your best to not watch those Hollywood movies. I mean, it's not necessary, right? But still, these are, even though this is a small, perhaps insignificant example of what we're talking about, but what I'm trying to say is that we definitely need to keep control of ourselves, you know, have trust in Allah, have that reliance upon Allah, ask Allah to help you now that that extra protection of the holy month of Ramadan has finished, you know, ask Allah to keep protecting you and to help you to be able to continue that self-control. These first 10 days after the holy month of Ramadan are very important. They're very critical, right? Many of the spiritual masters, even though our time has run out, they have said that if an individual, and it comes from the traditions of the 14 infallibles, alayhim wasalam, that if an individual for 40 days keeps up a certain act, that eventually it'll become a habit for them. They'll become accustomed. It'll become easy. So the 30 days of Ramadan have passed. When you add the 10 days that we are going through, they add up to 40. So this time is very important when it comes to self-control and our Islamic lifestyle.
IRIB English Radio. Our website is parstoday.ir.
You can email us at englishradio@irib.ir.
Limelight.
A federal judge has denied Hunter Biden's attempts to dismiss federal gun charges against him. The ruling all but ensures a trial will move forward this summer. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. The national broadcaster CBS News has covered this story and tells us more. A federal judge in Delaware refused on Friday, 12th of April, to throw out a federal gun case against Hunter Biden, rejecting the president's son's claim that he is being prosecuted for political purposes as well as other arguments. U.S. District Judge Mary Ellen Noreika denied defense efforts to scuttle the prosecution charging Hunter Biden with lying about his drug use in October of 2018 on a form to buy a gun that he kept for about 11 days. Hunter Biden's lawyers had argued the case was politically motivated and asserted that an immunity provision from an original plea deal that fell apart still holds. They had also challenged the appointment of special counsel David Weiss, the U.S. attorney in Delaware, to lead the prosecution. The trial is tentatively scheduled to begin in early June. Judge Mary Ellen Noreika, who was appointed to the bench by former President Donald Trump, has not yet ruled on a challenge to the constitutionality of the gun charges. Hunter Biden faces separate tax counts in Los Angeles, California, alleging he failed to pay at least $1.4 million in taxes over 3 years while living an extravagant lifestyle during his days of using drugs. The judge overseeing that case refused to dismiss the charges earlier this month. Hunter Biden has pleaded not guilty in both cases. A representative for his legal team didn't immediately respond to a request for comment. President Biden's son has acknowledged struggling with an addiction to crack and cocaine during that period in 2018, but his lawyers have said he didn't break the law and another non-violent first-time offender would not have been charged. Defense attorney Abby Lowe had argued Hunter Biden was selectively charged for improper political purposes. They argued that David Weiss buckled under political pressure to indict the president's son amid criticism of the plea deal from Donald Trump and other Republicans. Judge Noreika said in her ruling that Biden's team provided nothing concrete to support a conclusion that anyone actually influenced the special counsel's team. The pressure campaign from congressional Republicans may have occurred around the time that special counsel decided to move forward with indictment instead of pretrial diversion, but the court has been given nothing credible to suggest that the conduct of those lawmakers or anyone else had any impact on the special counsel, the judge wrote. It is all speculation. The national broadcaster ABC News has also covered the same story. A judge in Delaware has denied attempts by President Joe Biden's son, Hunter Biden, to dismiss three federal gun charges, all but ensuring a trial will move forward this summer. Attorneys for Hunter Biden in December filed a flurry of challenges to an indictment brought by special counsel David Weiss, challenging David Weiss's authority to file charges and claiming the indictment came as the result of a selective and vindictive prosecution. Defense attorneys also argued that an immunity provision tethered to Hunter Biden's ill-fated plea agreement remained in effect. Prosecutors say Hunter Biden lied on a federal form about his drug use when he obtained a Colt Cobra 38 SPL revolver in 2018, after he later acknowledged in his memoir Beautiful Things, that he was addicted to drugs around that time. Hunter Biden owned a firearm for 11 days and never fired it, according to his attorneys. David Weiss's office in January pushed back on Hunter Biden's efforts to dismiss the case, calling his various arguments absurd, stunningly weak, and wholly unsupported by facts and law, and a fiction designed for a Hollywood script. On Friday, 12th of April, Judge Mary Ellen Noreika sided with prosecutors, ensuring that the case will move forward to trial, which is tentatively scheduled to begin in early June. Attorneys for Hunter Biden had rested their hopes for dismissal in large part on their claim that an immunity provision in their plea deal, which ultimately fell apart, was ratified when both parties signed it. But David Weiss's office argued that the contract required approval from a probation officer, and the probation officer never signed it. Judge Mary Ellen Noreika wrote on Friday, 12th of April, that the relevant language in the agreement unambiguously requires probation to approve the agreement. Hunter Biden had also argued that David Weiss buckled under political pressure from Republicans and former President Donald Trump, but Judge Noreika issued a stinging rebuke. At best, Hunter Biden has generically alleged that individuals from the prior administration were or are targeting him or his father, and therefore his prosecution here must be vindictive, Judge Noreika wrote. The problem with this argument is that the charging decision at issue was made during this administration by Special Counsel David Weiss, at a time when the head of the executive branch of the government prosecuting the defendant is the defendant's father. Defendant's claim is effectively that his own father targeting him for being his son, a claim that is nonsensical under the facts here, Judge Noreika wrote. The ruling marks another legal setback for Hunter Biden after a federal judge in California earlier this month blocked similar challenges to a 9-count indictment on tax charges. That case is expected to go to trial just weeks after the Delaware gun case. The website Axios has also covered the same story. A federal judge has rejected attempts to dismiss the federal gun case against Hunter Biden, according to court records. Hunter Biden was indicted last year on 3 counts relating to his alleged illegal possession of a firearm. The trial is scheduled to begin in early June. U.S. District Judge Mary Ellen Noreika, appointed by former President Donald Trump, denied the efforts on Friday, 12th of April. Judge Noreika ultimately rejected the defense's argument that the prosecution is vindictive. The indictment was brought last September by Special Counsel David Weiss. Hunter Biden was accused of falsifying a federal firearms form and illegal possession of a firearm whilst using a narcotic. Judge Noreika also acknowledged the defense's suggestions that the Trump administration had involvement in bringing the case against him to take aim at him or his father. The problem with this argument is that the charging decision at issue was made during this administration by Special Counsel David Weiss, at a time when the head of the executive branch of the government prosecuting the defendant is the defendant's own father, Judge Noreika wrote. Defendant's claim is effectively that his own father targeted him for being his son, a claim that is nonsensical under the facts here. Hunter Biden also faces federal tax charges in California and is due to stand trial on 20th of June.
We are with you. What about you? IRIB English Radio.
Start.
Movement.
Speed.
Live in hope.
Toward the peak.
On Youth Station. Youth Station.
I am a Muslim, Islamati. Allah my Lord.
This word Quran.
Muhammad Prophet. Praise be upon. I am Muslim for all of time.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaikum, dear listeners from all around the world. Welcome back to a new episode of
Youth Station.
I am Beta.
And this is Mustafa.
Yeah. And once again, we have the chance to be next to you at the youth generation, which I think is a pleasure to be, first of all, a candidate at this generation and then have the chance to talk to this generation.
Definitely.
And at this episode, we're going to talk about the relevance between this youth generation and their interest in religious contexts.
Mm.
So there should be some ways based on this fact that we're living in an era full of social medias, full of technologies and full of actually entertainments.
Right.
So we have to use this creativity in order to make them involved with the religion. So what do you think about it?
Yeah, it's. I think it's a huge problem. I would almost describe it as a crisis among youth today. Now, if somebody wants to go and look this up, they can. There's this thing called the Four Horsemen of Atheism. Okay.
Yeah.
Have you heard of this?
Yeah, I've heard.
Right. In the West, you have like these four personalities that are known as the Four Horsemen of Atheists. They are spending so much money and so much time on promoting atheism. Like we promote Islam. These people actually go and promote the opposite
of that. Yeah, exactly.
And what a lot of us don't realize is that in Western media, in Western movies, TV shows, cartoons, there's like, it's entrenched in that, these type of thoughts and thinking, right? They will make fun of religion. They'll make fun of religious personalities. They'll
definitely
bring up a lot of questions,
that,
right?
Yeah.
Now, if you don't have a very solid base, you will easily fall into those traps.
I do agree with that.
Right?
Because sometimes, even me, that I try to go research and have my knowledge upgraded to the in this combat with the Western countries. But still, there are times that they actually fool me with these beautiful words like the freedom of speech, freedom of that.
Right.
And these sort of things are really beautiful. At the same time, inside. And the point is, there are so many things that we have to do as the youth generation and also as the society in order to keep and preserve our youth generation from all these hazards and harms.
This is IRIB English Radio. You are listening to Youth Station.
Welcome back, dear listeners. IRIB English Radio here. So, brother, we were talking about the ways and methods that we can save our youth generation from all these potential hazards.
Right. So, have you seen the movie Inception? I think we've talked about it before on the show.
I've seen that movie.
Right? So there's this, the idea in that movie, one of the ideas in that movie is that they go and plant ideas in people's minds, right? And one of the lines in that movie is that, I'm paraphrasing, but if you plant an idea in someone's head, it's very difficult to remove it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So in the same way, it's really important for us to look at what type of things we're listening to and what type of ideas we're gaining from them, right? Sometimes.
Exactly.
And the way to tackle that, I would say, I'm not saying you shouldn't go and watch like these movies or TV shows. If that's something you want to do, you should. But you need to be very strong in your mind, right? You need to be very strong that you don't fall into a lot of doubts. And if you do, then go and do the research.
Yeah.
But you might ask me then, what if somebody doesn't want to do that? If somebody doesn't like to do that, right? How do you make
all
them
right.
do that? I'll let you answer for it. How do you think you could make someone more attracted towards like better ideas or better knowledge.
I get it. I believe the first step towards a certainty is doubt. So the seed of certainty is that, first of all, you have to answer. First of all, you have to question everything. You have to question your identity, your creation. Of course, there are things that our brain is too limited to answer, like the identity of Allah Almighty, which is something that we cannot touch because our brain is more limited than these kind of criteria. Sure. But there are things that you can ask yourselves. This is the first step in my opinion. But first of all, you have to make sure that you have the capacity and tolerance towards all these doubts. Because I have some friends that whenever they feel like they're lost, whenever they, for example, watch a philosophical movie, specifically Western ones, they feel like they're lost, they lose all their hopes, they get depressed, and all of these consequences. So first of all, you have to work on yourself in order to get resistant towards all these doubts. And you have to improve and develop this will in you in order to find the answer, not get lost in the questions. And for sure, it takes time. It's a really difficult road because we're living in an era full of false information. For example, they give you a piece of right information. In the cover of that right information, there are a lot of false information. And this is the sadness of the social media era that we are living in. But still, I think we can make use of it.
Definitely. I was probably among these youth at some point who was confused or who was sort of maybe lost because, I grew up in an environment which was in a Western sort of environment. Inside of all of us, I think we have a desire to know the truth. Right? Yeah. Every human being has that built-in desire. We would say it's, in our fitra, which would be
in our nature,
that we're all searching for truth. And ultimately, what I realize is by living that sort of life, Western sort of lifestyle, it doesn't necessarily bring happiness. Right?
Yeah.
It only brings temporary joy or happiness. But, in the long run, what I notice in Western societies not only in Western society, in any society where people are like sort of away from religion, they're not very happy.
Yeah.
Right? They look happy, but then once you go into their lives, you realize they have a lot of problems. They have a lot of family issues, for example.
Exactly.
Or they'll have other problems. And then you sort of realize why our religion has told us to do the things the right way. Why it's told us to avoid many things. So the way I would attract a youth today towards religion is definitely using logic and knowledge.
Yeah.
And using real life examples of people that have failed. Right? Learn from others.
Yeah.
Learn from others' mistakes.
I believe this is a good method because as a candidate from Youth Generation, I love someone that would come to me and challenge me about my beliefs. And then he or she has the knowledge and reasoning to convince me about the thing. Because some people think that because we are young, we cannot think. It's not like that. We are not experienced
kind of
enough. Yeah, it's kind of opposite. We are not experienced enough, okay? But that doesn't mean that we cannot be convinced by reasoning. Yeah, that's the point I wanted to mention, because it happened to me a lot, that they actually felt like, okay, you're young, you don't need even to talk about these sort of things.
See, that I think that's one of the mistakes that our elders make, is that, like I said, it's kind of the opposite. I sometimes feel that our elders have closed their thinking.
Yeah.
Like, if you try to challenge them about a way, their way of thinking, they're not open to that.
Exactly.
Whereas today, in today's environment, you have to be open to that, right? If you're not, you're going to suffer, right?
We need... So thank you, brother, to hear we talked about this issue, which is one of the most important challenges in every society, not only Western countries, I believe, in every society that we are facing, even in Muslim countries. And so, dear listeners, let's go for a short break, then we're going to come back in a blink of an eye. back, dear listeners. So this is your station, by the way. We're talking about this issue of inviting and challenging other people, specifically use a station towards thinking more by reasoning, by use of different methods. Put the reasoning and other ways aside. How can we make use of these social medias in order to invite the youth generation into thinking?
It's a very difficult question, I think.
Yeah.
Because social media is kind of like a platform that's full of everything, right? It has good things and has bad things. And I would say there's almost like a flood of more bad things on social media versus good things.
I do agree with that.
Right? So the way you want to use social media is, again, you want to be very, very... If you're viewing social media, then you have to be very careful about what you're looking at, because it can very easily take you down like many different paths, right?
Yeah.
And the way that we try to use it is to promote our ideas and you know, our... And I wanted to come back to this, that, you know... Today's youth, the questions that they have, you know, like one of the main causes why they're going away from religion is because they're confused, right? They have confused ideas. And what they don't maybe, what I didn't maybe realize is that Islam and our religion is very strong in philosophy, right? And our question philosophical, but they're not being discussed or they're not being promoted. If those people have those questions, if they were to come and look at our philosophy, they will find the answers there many times, right? So I would say you should definitely be searching for the truth, whether it's on social media or wherever you are, and, you know, turn to those people who have the answers. Don't, like, lose hope.
Yeah, right? Exactly. This
Don't
is
lose
the
hope.
Point.
Yeah, yeah.
The depression that comes after those questions is because you feel like that's the end of the world. This is the complete darkness I'm getting lost in. But it's not like that. It's always someone there that will help you in order to find your answers. Islam itself is complete enough to answer all of our questions, and I think you have to give it a try, at least.
Yeah, I would say that sometimes I haven't found answers, even I've looked for them. You know, sometimes there's questions you may not be able to find answers for, by the way. For example, you know, what is God made out of? You know, even we're talking about some, like,
questions.
You know, there's some things like the essence, you can't reach the essence of God, you can't understand it, right? But those things that are there, you know, we need to research. That's my point. You need to go and do your research. And to make that maybe more attractive is where social media can come in, I think.
Exactly.
You know what you asked? And, you know, people are trying to do that. There's definitely people trying to do that.
When it's studying medicine, they tell us only one thing. There is only one principle in being successful in medicine, which is you have to have the resistance towards not understanding. I mean, there are so many times, it happens a lot to you, that you may read something, you may find your answer, but you may not be convinced, you may not be understood. Mm. You may not lose all your hopes or all your beliefs. Exactly, this is the time that you can consider it as a test for all of your beliefs and how strong they are.
The other thing I wanted to add, maybe like an advice or a tip, would be that, you know, life is short. Right? And you can't spend all your time like sort of confused or
depressed or lost.
Yeah, you're gonna die one day, right?
Yeah.
And it's really important how you spend your life.
Exactly.
And I would say look at the end result of those people that are not religious versus maybe that are religious, and you'll see the difference in the way they've led their lives.
Yeah.
Right. So that would be one way is to sort of maybe come closer to reality.
Yeah.
Right? Understand reality. If you don't understand reality, then that's where you're going to suffer, right? Because you're going to have like false hopes or false expectations,
exactly,
which are never going to be met.
Yeah.
Right? Whereas our religion is all entrenched in reality. It reminds you of reality, right? It reminds you of death. It reminds you of so many other things.
Yeah.
I would highly recommend people to read Nahjul Balagha, you know, the sermons of Imam Ali.
Nice suggestion.
Those are amazing sermons to, first of all, make you familiar with reality and inspire and motivate you.
Yeah.
Right?
Thank you, brother. So, to give you the gist of today's discussion, I have to tell you that sometimes this feeling of not being interested in religion is because you are so much confused and you feel hopeless of finding your answers. My brother and I actually gave you some suggestions, mostly based on our own experiences towards this path. Wish it was helpful for you. Thank you for listening to us, and it was all the time we had for today's episode. So, wassalamu alaikum
wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
I will tell you, dear youth, that the future belongs to you. By Allah's favor, you, dear youth, will see that day, and you will hand down your sources of pride to the future generations. Greetings be upon you and Allah's mercy and blessings.
And inshallah, we will continue talking about
this. We'll discuss that inshallah in the next session. Wassalamu alaikum.
Alhamdulillahi Rabbil Alameen. And don't go away.
We will continue this very essential topic with our great youth.
Wassalamu alaikum. Wassalamu alaikum. Wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif. Ya Latif.
Allah, in the limelight.
Donald Trump has publicly defended House Speaker Mike Johnson against an ouster threat by Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene. We take a look at the world media's coverage of this story. Please stay with us. The national broadcaster ABC News has covered this story and tells us more. Donald Trump and House Speaker Mike Johnson appeared together on Friday, 12th of April, at the former president's Florida estate. A show of unity as the embattled Johnson faces a threat to his leadership. Speaker Mike Johnson is under threat from his own party. Trump said of Johnson, "He's doing a really good job under very tough circumstances, and I appreciate that he came to Mar-a-Lago." The focus of their joint appearance was on what they call election integrity, a chief priority for Donald Trump, who continues to lie about the results of the 2020 presidential race. Trump's attention on the issue comes in an election year when there is expected to be another tight matchup against President Joe Biden. Mike Johnson, who was one of the 147 GOP lawmakers who voted to overturn the results of the 2020 election, said on Friday, 12th of April, that congressional Republicans will introduce legislation to require people who register to vote in a federal election to prove that they're an American citizen. As he outlined the proposal, Johnson made several false claims about non-citizens voting in elections, repeating assertions that Donald Trump had made in recent days. Both leaders also used the opportunity to continue to slam President Joe Biden and Democrats over their handling of the southern border, with Mike Johnson falsely stating that they wanted to turn migrant crossings the border illegally into voters, claiming that they could sway next November's presidential election. Donald Trump claimed he would not, if elected, sign a national abortion ban, something that Mike Johnson supports. Also looming large over the appearance were other recent areas of disagreement between Trump and Johnson on additional Ukraine aid and the reauthorization of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act, or FISA. Donald Trump encouraged House GOP hardliners this week to block reauthorizing FISA, resulting in an embarrassing setback for Mike Johnson, though the legislation ultimately passed the House earlier on Friday with bipartisan support. Asked about the FISA passage, Donald Trump said he was still not a big fan of FISA, but said he told everyone to do what you want. The bill passed reauthorizes a key FISA program for 2 years, meaning that if Donald Trump is re-elected, he will have the opportunity to review it again. On Ukraine aid, Trump said he and Mike Johnson were looking at it right now. He appeared to back the idea of House Republicans considering making aid available to Ukraine as a loan, and he continued his criticism of how Washington has handled assistance to the war-torn country. Such topics are points of contention between Mike Johnson and the far-right wing of the Republican Party, including Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, who introduced a motion to vacate the Speaker's chair last month. Marjorie Taylor Greene and Mike Johnson met this week for the first time since she filed the motion. They appeared still at odds after nearly an hour of conversation, as Greene didn't back away from her threat to force a vote on whether to remove Mike Johnson from the top post. The Georgia congresswoman told reporters she heard a lot of excuses from Mike Johnson and that she urged him not to move forward with aid to Ukraine. Donald Trump's orbit isn't happy with Marjorie Taylor Greene, a long vocal Trump supporter, and her threat to throw the House GOP into chaos again with another speakership battle. Another battle for the Speaker's chair could undercut the Republican Party's effort to maintain its majority in the House of Representatives to flip the Senate and win the White House. Donald Trump said he gets along very well with both Mike Johnson and Marjorie Taylor Greene when asked about the situation during the joint appearance at Mar-a-Lago. "He's doing about as good as you're going to do," Trump said of Johnson. "I'm sure Marjorie understands that. She's a very good friend of mine, and I know she has a lot of respect for the Speaker." Pressed further on Marjorie Taylor Greene's motion to vacate, Donald Trump said, "It was unfortunate that people bring it up, because right now we have much bigger problems." The American newspaper The Daily Beast has also covered this story. Standing alongside House Speaker Mike Johnson on Friday, 12th of April, Donald Trump offered his most vocal support for the Leader of the House as the threat of a motion to vacate hangs over his head from one of the former president's staunchest supporters, Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene, Republican of Georgia. "We're getting along very well with the Speaker, and I get along with Marjorie Taylor Greene," Trump said, when asked about the motion to vacate during a press conference at Mar-a-Lago in Palm Beach, Florida. "It's not a very easy situation for any speaker. I'm sure that Marjorie understands that, and I know she has a lot of respect for the speaker." Trump concluded by saying, "I stand with the speaker." This statement represents the most vocal that Trump has been against the motion to vacate threat, which was also used earlier this year against a former Speaker of the House, Kevin McCarthy. When the motion to vacate against Kevin McCarthy was filed, Donald Trump remained silent, not taking a stance one way or another, at least publicly. But after seeing the turmoil that resulted from Kevin McCarthy's ouster, Trump now appears to be trying to tamp down any motion to vacate threat by publicly supporting Mike Johnson, even if he didn't directly say he opposes Marjorie Taylor Greene's attempt to oust him as Speaker. While he dodged the main question everyone wanted answers to, whether or not he opposes Greene trying to oust Johnson, Trump did express frustration that the motion to vacate has been used this Congress. Donald Trump said, "It's unfortunate that people keep bringing it up." CBS News has also covered the same story. A photo op was worth a thousand words for House Speaker Mike Johnson on Friday, 12th of April, as he stood alongside former President Donald Trump at his Mar-a-Lago resort in Florida, presenting a united front at a critical time in Johnson's tenure to announce a new GOP election integrity bill. Donald Trump, the presumptive Republican nominee for president, told reporters that Johnson is doing a really good job under very tough circumstances, precisely the endorsement that Mike Johnson needed as he tries to fend off a threat to his speakership from Representative Marjorie Taylor Greene. Donald Trump said he gets along very well with Greene but made it clear that House Republicans shouldn't undertake another drawn-out battle for the Speaker's gavel anytime soon. "We're getting along very well with the Speaker, and I get along very well with Marjorie," Trump said. "We have a Speaker. He was voted in, and it was a very complicated process. I think it's not an easy situation for any Speaker. I think he's doing a very good job. He's doing as good a job as you can do, and I'm sure that Marjorie understands that." The press conference was ostensibly about the new election integrity bill that Mike Johnson said House Republicans will take up soon. The Speaker said the still unreleased legislation would require proof of citizenship to register to vote and closes loopholes in state voter registration protocols that require voters to assert their citizenship, but not necessarily to prove it. States would also be required to remove any non-citizens from voter rolls, Mike Johnson emphasized.
Voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. Assalamu alaykum wa rahmatullah.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
همه با وجود قده سرطانی اسرائیل مخالفیم.
All of us are opposed to the cancerous tumor Israel.
وجه مشترک همه وحدت امت اسلامی.
Unity of Islamic Ummah is the aspect that all of Islamic denominations have in common.
This is the part of the speech delivered on June 23, 2015 by Ayatollah Khamenei, the leader of the Islamic Revolution. The second point is that I consider the negotiating team, the friends who have shouldered these responsibilities during this time, to be trustworthy, brave, courageous, and religious. Everyone should know this. Many of the participants in this meeting are not aware of the content of the negotiations. If you are aware of the content and details of the negotiations and what happens there, then you would surely confirm part of what I am saying. Besides, I know some of these friends up close, and I know some from their performance record. They are religious and trustworthy people. Their goal is to further the affairs of the country and to solve problems that they are working on it. They really have a national zeal and courage. They are confronted with a large number of people. I do not want to mention the appropriate description of these people because sometimes there are certain descriptions which some people really deserve, but it is not appropriate for us to present it. They really express their viewpoints and pursue matters in the face of such people with complete courage and with absolute precision.
دنیای اسلام یک
The world of Islam has one single prescription today, and that is unity. This prescription exists in all Islamic countries. Nations should be united.
The third point is about the esteemed critics. I'm not against criticism. It is all right to criticize, and it is necessary and helpful. However, everyone should pay attention to that criticizing is easier than taking action. We easily see the other person's flaws while we fail to see the dangers, difficulties, concerns, and problems that he deals with. This is like watching someone who wants to dive into a pool. Imagine that you are standing beside a pool. Someone has gone up and he wants to dive into the pool from a height of 10 meters. You are watching him. He dives into the pool and you, who are watching him beside the pool, say, "Well, he bent his legs and knees. This is one error." Yes, this is an error, but you should climb up the diving board, take a look at the water from that height of 10 meters, and then you should make a judgment. Criticizing is easy. Of course, what I am saying should not prevent you from making criticisms. You can criticize, but you should do so by considering the fact that the other side might be aware of some of the faults that we express in our criticisms. But they have reached this conclusion anyway, because of necessity or another reason.
Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done. You've done for me through all my years I've been lost. You've guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope. Oh Allah, I wanna thank you. I wanna thank you for all the things that you've done.
Yusuf Jalali, Tehran.
Rubashavit, Gaza.
Jerome Hughes, Brussels.
Saeed Poreza, London.
Rasha Saglam, Istanbul.
Saeed Amin Alami, Kabul.
Shahana Bhatt, Indian administered Kashmir.
Around the world with reporters.
Just one day after France's foreign minister earned praise for saying that sanctions on Israel could be coming over their refusal to allow humanitarian aid to Gaza, he quickly backtracked in a session before Parliament. Many are saying the episode revealed the uniquely powerful sway Zionism has in France.
France, although it has the biggest Jewish community in Europe, has also the most extreme right-wing anti-Palestinian Jewish community in Europe. And this this Jewish community in France has a lot of saying and a lot of control over the media, over the political class. So you have very few people within this community who are protesting what's going on in the Middle East. Not like the United States and Great Britain.
The majority of France's Jews fled from former French colonies in Africa once those countries gained independence in the 1950s and 1960s, and they reportedly brought with them stringent anti-Arab and pro-imperialist views. In 2019, French Parliament controversially and incorrectly equated anti-Zionism with anti-Semitism, and they are currently reviewing a proposal to fully criminalize anti-Zionism.
They're saying straight, anti-Zionism is anti-Semitism. Therefore, any criticism of Zionism, any criticism of Israel, means you are a criminal because you're an anti-Semite. And so it's killing all debate. Now, all throughout the collective West, but especially in France, the number one threat to freedom of speech is the Zionist movement and the pro-Israeli movement. And I weigh my words because it's very, very dangerous to say something like that in France because you'll find yourself in court.
Since October 7th, support for Hamas and even support for Palestine
is often being prosecuted as so-called apology for terrorism. Pro-Palestinian demonstrations were banned nationwide for weeks, leading to thousands of fines on protesters